An 18-year-old boy, young man, 19-year-old young man, high school athlete, big dreams, highly motivated, full of energy, just focused on his future, focused on what he's doing academically at university and what he's doing athletically, starts feeling pain in his knee. And he's an athlete. If you could take me to the first slide, please, little church that could. He's an athlete. And so the idea of knee pain, it's like familiar. But the pain keeps getting greater and greater and more significant. And finally, he goes to a doctor, and the doctors run a bunch of tests, and they do some scans and x-rays, and they say to him, listen, we have some very sad news for you. You have bone cancer, and the only possible treatment for you is to amputate your leg above the knee. 18 years old. The night before, take me to one slide forward, please. The night before his surgery, his high school coach comes to him and gives him a magazine article about an amputee that ran the New York Marathon. And read the article, and that night, before his surgery, Terry Fox dreamed about running across Canada. One of the many things that he said is, anything is possible. Next slide, please. Anything is possible if you try. Anything is possible if you try. The only thing that could have stopped Terry Fox from reaching the Pacific Ocean did. September 1, 1980, Terry Fox stopped his run just outside of Thunder Bay, Ontario. Now, you could look at that as a failure. He started and he didn't finish. His vision, his dream was to raise $25 million for cancer research. A dollar for every Canadian. Collectively, the Terry Fox Foundation has raised over $850 million for cancer research. It is the most inspiring thing to go on the website, because I spent some time prepping for this talk on the Terry Fox Foundation website. And all the way along, every time someone gives, it pops up. Doug gave $50, right? Barb gave $100. Somebody else gave $75. And it's just ongoing, people constantly pouring into this dream. Crazy thing is, there are statues to Terry Fox all across this country. Right there, you go down to Beacon Hill at Mile Zero, there is a statue to Terry Fox. Even though he didn't make it, we acknowledge his accomplishment. We acknowledge his legacy. He ran for 143 days in a row. If you've ever done distance running, and the kind of distance running that he was doing, 42 kilometers, it was actually 37 kilometers a day. But at 37 kilometers a day, just a normal body sustains incredible wear and tear. But to do that every day for 143 days, 5,373 kilometers, he ran. Terry said this, I want to set an example that will never be forgotten. I want to set an example that will never be forgotten. And he did. And he did. He did all of that. This is my favorite t-shirt. I've got lots of Harley shirts, but you've seen most of them. This is my favorite t-shirt. It's the 35th anniversary of the run. And I think actually it says on the back, right? A dream as big as Canada. But I'm captivated by the vision of Terry Fox. He chose to run a race. And we have a race to run. Our race is different than Terry's race, but we have a race to run too. And as impressive as his accomplishments are, what we're called to do is of eternal and lasting significance. Come with me to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with endurance the race set before us. We do this keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame, and now he is seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. Pray with me this morning. Father, we believe this, that there is something important you want to say to us today. There is something important you want to say to us today. So help us dial ourselves in to hear your heart, to hear your voice, and to capture the word and revelation that you want to bring to our lives that is going to help us run with diligence and excellence. We ask it in the name of Jesus. Amen. So this is interesting. If you've ever been a runner, or if you can flash back to school, or, you know, training, basic training, or, you know, whatever, academy, whatever you might have done, or, you know, in the course of your career, the Greek word for run is agon, A-G-O-N, agon. And it is the root word that we use for agony. If you have ever been forced to run, you'll understand agon and agony. There's a harsh reality, right? We do this thing, right, as we're sharing the gospel with people. We tell them how wonderful and beautiful it is to love and serve and follow Jesus. And we all know that's true, right? It is wonderful and beautiful to follow Jesus. But at the same time, it is brutal and harsh. It is agony. It is agony. It's interesting that the writer of the Hebrews, says this, let us run our agony with endurance. Let us run our agony with endurance. This theme is fascinating because in Paul's writings, Paul did not write Hebrews, but in Paul's writings, he talks about often, he uses the imagery of physical contest. Physical battle, physical endurance. He talks about running a race. He talks about wrestling and battling. And there's this theme that plays out over and over and over again. The reality is that in our world, there are opponents who will do everything in their power to pin us down or to get us to tap out. There's a verse in Proverbs that says, "Beware of the little foxes, or the little foxes spoil the vines." It sounds so silly and trivial, but it's like no. It's the little foxes. It's the little things that become big things. It's the little things that we tolerate that mess up our ability to run. It's the little things that distract us. It's the little things that the enemy uses, like discouragement. I feel unappreciated. I feel ignored. I'm this has just become so heavy and so hard for me. I'm gonna give up. Or he uses division as a way to destroy what God is doing in us and through us, to lead us to defeat. Because his grand goal is for us to pack it in. What he wants more than anything else is for us to give up. He doesn't care if we keep going to church. He doesn't care if you keep giving. He doesn't care if you keep saying grace before you sit down for every meal or snack. He does not care if you do that. What he cares about is you stop pressing forward and building the kingdom. He wants that to come to an end. He wants vision to die. He wants hope to die. He wants passion to die. He doesn't care if we gather here. What he cares about is that we have passion, that we have vision, that we have direction, that we have clarity, that we have purpose. So the writer of Hebrews says, let us run with endurance. Let us run diligently, purposefully, in a determined way. Determination, Terry Fox. In a determined way. Not like, oh, it's hard today. I don't feel like running. Like I've done multiple, like 25 half marathons. You'd never know by looking at me. But 25 half marathons, at least two, one full, and I pulled out an injury in L.A. But listen, I hated running up hills. Right, Cheryl? We hate running up hills. Fun to run down a hill. Hard to run up a hill. But after a while, you just come to terms with the fact that if I'm going to get better, I have to run up the hill. I had a running coach. She said, I want you to work on hills this week. And so at our house, where we live in Langford, we're just around the corner from Crystal Hill, and it was a mile from the bottom of Crystal Hill to the top. So I had to run slowly up the hill and then back down, and then slowly up the hill and back. And if I did that five times, my lungs were on fire. My legs feel like jelly. But when I went to run my marathon, it paid huge dividends because I had trained on the hills. I learned how to do it. The race is a race. It's not a walk. It's not a walk. Now, Barb would run with me too, and we would run different kinds of races. So we might line up together, but it was like, I kissed her goodbye, and I'll see you at the finish line. All right, and then we would run the race, and she'd say, oh, did you see this? Did you see that? Did you see the tractors and the flowers? Did you see the people holding the signs? It's like, no, I didn't see any of that. Because all I saw was the back of the person in front of me. That's all I cared about was the back of the person in front of me. I want to run hard, but I want to get this done. Because for me, it was a race. Did I think I was going to be in first? No. No, I always wanted to be better than average. I always wanted to be better than average. But I didn't ever think I was going to be first. Now, the other piece in this is that it's the race set before us. This is really important. You can back me up when we're just a little ahead. It's the race set before us. There's an interesting idea here. There's an interesting concept for us to unpack, right? My race is not your race, and your race is not the person beside you. It's not their race either. Your race is your race, and it's that race that you need to run with diligence and endurance. Here's the beautiful thing, right? Because it all sounds really tough, and it just sounds really overwhelming, and it's like, I'll find something else to do. But Paul points us to this hope. He says, look, let us run this race. Let us run this race with endurance. Now, the interesting thing is, there were no chapter breaks in the letter to the Hebrews. There were no chapter breaks anywhere in the Bible. The translators put those breaks in place. So when we read chapter 11, there, right, where it's like, here is the Hall of Fame. This is the Faith Hall of Fame. Here is the long list, I think, of 17 names that show up. Here's a long list of all of the people, the greats, in the Hall of Fame of faith. And we go from that, therefore, since we are surrounded, right? It's, here's the hall. These are all the people that are cheering us on. Let's run together. So the writer of the Hebrews is saying this. Look, you're not the first one to experience the struggle. You're not the first one to experience the struggle that comes with running this race. You are going to be disappointed. You are going to be hurt. You are going to struggle. You are going to have to battle through. You know, sometimes we say, well, I got to get over it. No, actually, you need to let go of it. Big difference in how you run the race. I let go of it versus I get over it, right? You're not the first one. There's a long list of people who have struggled and contended and ran sometimes for an answer they didn't see, ran towards a vision that they never saw the fulfillment of, but they ran nonetheless. They pressed on, they persevered, they obeyed God, they trusted Him. And we stay focused on that. God will bring you through. God will bring us through the struggle. God will bring us through the battle. God will bring us through the disappointment. God will bring us through the hurt and the heartache. He will bring us through if we let Him. If we let Him, He will bring us through. The places where He's challenging you, He will bring you through. So we need to run the race, knowing that the race can be won. Knowing that the race can be won. I'll tell you what I believe about City Light Church. There is a race that is set before us collectively, and we are in it to win it. I said, we're in it to win it. We are not here, heavens. We are working too hard. We have prayed too much. There's too much on the line for us to go, kumbaya, if it works, it works. It was the plan of God. If it doesn't work, oh, well, we'll just be mediocre. No! I want somebody to cheer. No, we are in it to win it. We are in it to impact Gorge Tillicum. We are in it to see lives changed. We are in it to preach the gospel. We are in it to see people set free. We are in it to win it. We are in it to win it. Yeah. Yes. Yes, we are. And here's how we get there, because our race requires intentionality. Our race requires intentionality. This is my friend Michelle Stillwell, former BC cabinet minister, multiple gold medalist in two Paralympic sports. She's now retired. I told her I was going to talk about her. I said, I'm going to use your picture. You can count it as the day you went to church. You can count it as the day you went to church. The writer of the Hebrews says this, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. I don't know if you watched the Olympics or not, but you know, like 30 years ago, people just showed up with like baggy t-shirts and kind of loose shorts, and that's how they ran. That's just how they ran. That's what you did. But now everything is skin tight. You say, thank God my shirt's not, Tim's shirt's not skin tight today. But everything is skin tight. It's all spandex because it gives them microseconds of an advantage, right? They throw off the weight of the things that would slow them down. There's two categories in this verse that I want to unpack. Weights that hinder us and slow us down. Those are lifestyle choices, regrets, and habits that hold us back. So the question when we talk about the weights that slow us down, the weights that hinder us, is not what's wrong with this? The question should be, does this help me run better? So I'm doing this personal development thing I've been doing for about a year now, and every day I have to score myself in a number of categories, and it tracks how I'm doing. And I was sharing this last night when we were hanging out at the fair, and you know, one of the things is my diet. Right, and I'm sharing this as I'm having right fair donuts with caramel and chocolate on them. I was like, my diet sucks. I need to get better. Right? And it's like, what does this help me? I don't like what I see when I stand on the scale. Does this help me? No. You know, the training adage is this: you can't outrun a bad diet. It's like, I'm not even running and my diet still sucks. Right? It's like, I have to be better. I have to do better this. Throw off the weight that hinders me. I have to throw that off. Now, you know what's going to happen is Barb's going to be feeding me salads and taking snacks out of my hand. That's what's going to happen when I get home today. Right? The question is not what's wrong with this. A better question is, will this help me run the race better? And then he goes on to talk about the sins that so easily entangle. I was when I was working in Ontario and spending half my time there, I was preaching in my friend's church in London. And so I went out the Saturday before, and then I went for a run before church that morning. And so I'm out running around in this neighborhood across the busy highway from the hotel. I'm out running along, and I'm crossing at an intersection, and I see this nylon loop. If you've ever delivered newspapers, you know that it's the nylon loop that bundles, like that holds the bundle together. And it's laying there. I can see it in the crosswalk. And I'm running along, and I'm not paying attention to anything, but I'm running along, and somehow I manage to step on it with one foot and drive the other foot into the open loop. Bam! I go down. Thankfully, I did not scrape my face, knock out any teeth, but I did scuff up my knees enough that I was concerned they were going to bleed through my jeans while I was preaching that morning. That loop is sin. That loop is a picture of sin. And the enemy lays out these things, right, designed to trip us up. The enemy lays these things out for us, designed to trip us up, to slow us down. And here's what happens. When we hold on to sin, eventually sin has its way. Eventually sin destroys us. Eventually sin damages our ability, our resolve to keep on running. Every time I've done this for long enough to know that I can't point to a single person that I've known who I could say, well, they tolerated sin in their life and they went on to follow Jesus successfully. It never happens. It never happens. Because those snares are set up to take us out. We need to say no to sin and yes to Jesus. Next, we stay alert and maintain focus. I don't know if you'd read, I forget what, it was a number of Olympics ago, maybe two or three Summer Olympics ago. But I was watching the hurdlers run. Because I think, I mean, it's one thing to run, it's another thing to do hurdles. And it's this amazing thing. They start off and they kick their leg and they're jumping over the hurdle and jumping over the hurdle and jumping over the hurdle. And it's like, I don't think I could do that. I don't think I could jump over 12-inch hurdles. Really? I just can't imagine how that would work for me. Right? But hurdlers train this way. They don't look at the bar. They don't look at the hurdle, right? Or the thing they have to jump over. They don't look at that. All they think about is, I'm going to kick my leg this high, I'm going to kick my leg this high, I'm going to kick my leg this high. Because the goal when you're running a hurdle is not to avoid being tripped. The goal is to win. The goal is to win. So sometimes, here's what happens. Is the temptation is, as we run this race, to get focused on the sin that I want to avoid. Oh, there's a loop in the road. Oh, I should avoid that. And as I'm looking at it, I run into it and take myself out. Oh, I should avoid this sin. I should avoid this sin. There are people in our world who walk around and all they're doing is looking for sin. Where's the devil? Where's the devil? What's the devil doing today? Always dark there. I mean, when I started working at the legislature as a chaplain, it's like, whoa, that's a very dark place. Ooh, it's a dark place there. How do you survive when all of that darkness? It's like darkness. The light of the world lives in me. Wherever I go, there's a light show. Right? Ooh. How does Claudio do it working in the schools? Like, oh, all of the darkness that's there. It's like Claudio walks in, darkness scatters because he represents the light of the world. Where you go on your street could be the darkest street in Saanich or Victoria or Langford or wherever it might be. You could live on the darkest street, on the most messed up street, in the most messed up building, on that messed up street. But friend, let me tell you today, if Jesus lives in your heart, light shines there and darkness scatters. Light shines there and darkness scatters. So we're not walking around looking for sin. We're walking around, we're running around, setting our eyes on Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, because the goal is not to avoid sin. The goal is to follow Christ. If you're looking at Jesus, you're not looking for sin. right? Your world is not determined by the sin around you. You are looking at Jesus. You're running towards him. The godliest people I know have their eyes fixed on Jesus, running towards him, right? Because when I'm looking at Jesus, sin is not a factor in my world. The race of faith, the goal is not to avoid sin. The goal is to follow Christ. So we're getting ready to wrap this up. Terry Fox said this. I have a dream. He's like a 20-something when he takes on this run. I have a dream as big as Canada. I mean, come on, somebody. Like, that's, you know, that's impressive, right? It's like, I have a dream as big as Canada. Well, let me tell you. This whole vision discovery process that we've gone through, as we've asked the Lord to show us what City Light could look like 5 years from now, if we let Jesus have his way, a dream in the heart of City Light. That process has birthed a dream in the heart of City Light that's bigger than all of Canada. Because it's as big as eternity. We've been given a dream that's as big as eternity. Our dream is this. We're going to proclaim the transforming power of the gospel to our neighbors, our community, our province, and the nations. We're going to proclaim the transforming power of the gospel, starting in Gorge Tillicum and going to the ends of the earth. You capture that. Think about this, that God has planted us in this place as a transformative people to impact the people who live around us. He's putting a burden in our hearts. He's giving strategy to us on how we're going to impact those people so that others can find and experience the goodness of God in their own lives. He's giving us a vision where lives will be changed. Imagine this, addicts will be set free. I posted it on the board. A guest writes on her prayer card that my son would be set free from his addictions. Somewhere on that board, that prayer card is there. God has planted us here so that addicts can be set free, so that marriages can be restored, so that one day, maybe when Ruby's a little bit taller than she is right now, there's a whole dozens of Rubies that are here. Proclaiming the goodness of God as they stand on a worship team, right? Going on mission trips all around the world, whatever it is God has in store for them, however that looks like, it's happening because we've latched onto the dream that Jesus has planted in our hearts. We're not showing up here for the short term. It's like, wow, we tried that for a year and it didn't work. Let's go to something else. No, we're digging in for the long term so the generations will be impacted. And God will be glorified because we are the little church that could. Amen. We're the little church that could. Stand with me today.